Look, I'm not even supposed to be here. I'm just crew man number 6. I'm expendable. I'm the guy in the episode who dives to prove how serious the situation is. I've got to get out of here.
Hiroshima.
Hello, gentle listeners, and welcome to another exciting episode of Know Your Turns at the Drive-In! This is the show where we discuss the strange, the obscure, the be the cult, or just plain bad movies that have ever crossed a camera lens.
And if you like our special episode, may I suggest you go to our website at psychojellyfish.com or follow us on Twitter at Jellycast and on Facebook.
We are your hosts, David Halston and...
your decidedly human other host, Lucas Wilson.
Can you imagine if we just did the entire episode that way?
I think everybody would stop listening 5 minutes in.
Absolutely. So enough of that.
We need your help.
If you haven't figured it out yet, this week we are reviewing Galaxy Quest.
For years,
never give up, never surrender.
The cast of Galaxy Quest have played the same parts.
Never give up,
never surrender.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warband, I shall avenge you.
I will say that stupid line one more time.
Their careers were bravely going.
By Grabthar's hammer.
Nowhere.
What a savings.
Until their biggest fans.
I must say that standing here in your presence is the greatest honor we could ever have hoped to achieve.
Requested a command performance.
Hey, where's my limo?
We have studied every facet of your missions and strategies.
We are actors, not astronauts.
You will save us.
That was a hell of a thing.
This Christmas.
Laredo, take us out.
You gotta move to the right.
Would you sit your ass down? You wanna drive this thing?
They're not just acting like heroes.
The whole thing was just a misunderstanding.
They must become heroes.
They look like little children. Hi, little guy.
Oh, darn.
DreamWorks Pictures presents Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Galaxy Quest.
You're just gonna have to kill it.
Well, go for the mouth, the throat, his vulnerable spots.
It's a rock, it doesn't have any vulnerable spots. I forget how much I like this movie every time.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those movies, like, I watch them, like, I really like this movie. And then a little while passed, and I'm like, yeah, I like that movie, but I'm never in the mood to watch it. But then I'll watch it, and I'm like, ah, why don't I watch this movie more?
Yeah, I know. It's funny, because it's a cult movie. It did not do very well in the theaters, like, box office-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, everyone who saw it loved it.
Yeah.
And kept that alive, and shared it, and that's why today it's now... it's half of what I'm saying I've already written down in my summary, so I might as well just get to it. Galaxy Quest is a 1999 sci-fi comedy starring Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, and many other familiar faces. It is an extremely clever spoof on Star Trek, which proposes the scenario, what if the cast of the show had a real space adventure? What could have become a laundry list of parody gags is instead brought together with sincere warmth and a deep understanding of the source material. The actor characters whose careers are defined by a now dated sci-fi show and spend all their time at conventions pandering to adoring fans who don't see them as they really are then met by adoring fans from another galaxy who have no understanding that they are not the characters from the show, and bring them into space to fend off an alien warlord in a replica of their TV spaceship. This creates a wonderful dynamic of the characters being fish out of water, yet with knowledge of the tropes they're encountering. that tension is hilarious, and each character gets to experience it in a different way. If you're a fan of sci-fi, you'll delight in the inside joke nature of much of the comedy. And if not, don't worry. The characters, story, and humor work completely on their own. Not a huge hit at the time, but when many other movies are forgotten, those who saw this remember it fondly and keep it alive, to where now it is a highly regarded cult classic. By Grabthar's Hammer. What a movie.
nice wrap-up there, Dave.
Well, thank you. I did think that that was interesting. It's like, I can't think of many things that do that. They have that sort of fish out of water experience,
mm-hmm.
but they know the tropes because it's all based on the TV show that they were in.
Yeah.
So it's like they know what they do, what they're supposed to do, but they've never done it seriously.
Yeah.
They've only done it as acting, as pretend, and now they have to do it for real.
It's like you're, when you watch this, I don't know for sure, but it definitely feels, this is one of the, it's a good parody in the sense that, it both sheds light on the faults of Star Trek while also, like, embracing them.
Yeah, it's done with love.
Yes.
As, and good parody should be. It's done with love of the source material.
Yeah, we like, there's parodies out there that are just like, huh, this is a thing that happens in that show that's stupid. And like, you know, it's where you get like, it's those scary movie type films.
Yeah, people who are actually disdainfully mocking the material.
Yeah. But this is like something that if you're a Star Trek fan, you're watching, it's like, yeah, that is absurd, but that, I love that. And the movie just embraces just the quirks that are in tropes of Star Trek.
It also takes a lot from like the actual like behind the scenes stuff from Star Trek. Like, something that happened to William Shatner happens to Tim Allen in this movie.
Yeah. You want to share it?
Yeah. At one point, they're at this convention, and he's being very nice to all the fans. And then Tim Allen goes into the restroom, and when he's in there, he hears some of the people at the convention mocking the actors for being at the convention. And I can sort of see that, like, sometimes I look at conventions, and it's, like, oh, this is all you have to do now is I was in this movie 30 years ago. Let me sign a poster for you. I can sort of understand, even though that's a mean thing to say, because it's like, if I was in a movie 30 years ago and I could get money from going to a convention and signing posters of that movie.
Yeah.
I'd be there.
Yeah, I forgot what it is. There was like, I remember somebody making a comment online and like some article on some geek website, I forgot, about a convention for some sci-fi movie that doesn't really have a larger world to it. So the idea of a convention for it, like there's just nothing there really you could do with the show. So like you just get actors there just from any other sci-fi thing. And it's just like, these people have nothing to do with this film. Franchise, what are they doing here? And it just seems like this sad thing. So it's gotta be, it's harder to do without with a series or something that doesn't have like a larger mythos to it.
But horror conventions specifically, which is the one I'm more keyed into, I don't want to like pick out a specific individual, but I will say this. Aaron went to a horror convention and set up a stand selling some of his crafts. You know, he made designs and he put them on t-shirts and
sold them.
And there, he was there with somebody else who made their own thing. Yet they actually paid money to have a table there to try to sell their stuff. And they were rubbing elbows with people and like, oh my God, that's a great performer. How surreal is that? That you're just like sitting around them.
I haven't heard any of these stories. How come Aaron hasn't talked about him?
Yeah, he met Ted Raimi and some of the guys from MST3K.
Oh, did they go to his table
and,
or something?
Jeffrey Coombs was there, I believe, as well.
Huh. I know Sarah's met a few.
Oh, right. Yeah, she posts her pictures online.
Yeah, she keeps running. Go to these conventions and meeting horror celebrities.
But, like, Dee Wallace was there. And that's when I was like, Dee Wallace, that's a big, she's a big actress. She's the mom in E.T. She's a Spielberg mom.
What was she doing there?
Well, she was in some horror movies.
Huh. Well, that's good. If you have like a career and you're not ashamed and you kind of embrace the fan love for like stuff you did in your earlier career, it's like, I like that. It's not like you moved on, you're above it all.
From Aaron's support, everyone was great.
Sounds like the case with like horror movie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People that work on them seem to be pretty cool people.
It's actually a very laid back crowd for some reason.
Yeah. You know, you think of the people that are, you think they'd all be like crazy, weird, antisocial folk, but it's.
No, that's the sci-fi and fantasy people. They don't know how to speak to each other. No eye contact. I mean, think about it. Horror is a much more easily embraced cultural thing than, like science fiction and fantasy. Those were considered like very nerdy. Like everyone went to horror movies. Yeah.
I mean, not everybody is, you know, intellectual, but everybody gets scared.
It is a much more universal appeal.
Yeah.
And the people who get to enjoy that feeling like a roller coaster, I'm not the first person to say this. It's been said 100 times. It's like they're getting something out of their system that actually, once they're through it, it's not like they have more anxiety. They've actually released tension.
But we're getting off track here and talking about horror movies.
But to tie it back in, I would say that Galaxy Quest is to science fiction what Young Frankenstein is to horror.
Okay.
And I would put those movies next to each other as equally good movies.
Loving parodies of the material.
Very affectionately done. Like, Young Frankenstein has that thing whenever they say that one woman's name, lightning strikes. For dramatic effect. So they're just like, they try it out, they're like, Tabluka.
Horse. Is it lightning or is it horses?
Oh, the horse, lightning and horses. Okay. It's like the lightning and the horses.
And she's not like a menacing character. It's just
menacing name.
Yeah. would you maybe put the, I don't know, this might be a stretch, but Monty Python and the Holy Grail with like fantasy adventure films and stories?
Maybe, but yeah, I think that's now so tied into fantasy culture, like everyone gets that reference that's into that culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can't be denied.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you're playing a D&D campaign, say, with a bunch of people, somebody's going to make a Monty Python and the Holy Grail reference. It's going to happen.
So like, I mean, like, would you think that that's just like Young Frankenstein to horror and Galaxy Quest to sci-fi? Like, would that be that to fantasy adventure?
I don't, cause it doesn't really feel like that much of a tribute. It feels really like its own thing that after the fact became tied very closely to the culture.
Interesting.
So it's almost like had the reverse effect.
So you don't think that the Monty Python folks were thinking about things about like Quest and stuff and...
Well, I think they did, but I think it's not the same with, like, you know, TV shows and movies. I think the guys in Monty Python were far more literate, and they were going from, like, Knights of the Round Table and Tales of Robin Hood stuff.
I mean, like, it'd still, like, be something involved more around literature than movies, but it's still pertaining to a kind of genre.
Yeah, I suppose if you took it from the aspect of, like, classical literature, but I wouldn't say fantasy, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not really a fantasy. It's really more like these, like, legends of the knights and medieval times stuff.
Well, I'll say it, I mean, because, like, you know, there is some fantasy.
Even though there's a wizard and there's a dragon and all that, they called me Tim. And my favorite joke in that was always the rabbit.
Well, I'm just thinking, because it's like, fans of like, you know, medieval fantasy, they all get those jokes and they love that movie. Fans of horror is going to get the jokes and love Young Frankenstein, and fans of sci-fi are going to get the jokes and love Galaxy Quest.
And fans of comedy will get all three.
Yeah. It's not like mocking it for the sake of mocking it. It's like, isn't this a crazy thing that we all like?
There is a great tribute in Monty Python's Holy Grail, but they're also taking off from their own style of comedy.
Yes, it's true.
So that's where I'd say there's a degree of separation, that they didn't necessarily construct everything out of the tribute like Young Frankenstein and Galaxy Quest did.
Yeah, I suppose that could be hard to like separate a little bit, because they are like like a foundation of modern comedy.
Oh yeah.
So it's like they invented so much that it went on. It is hard to separate, but an arguments could theoretically still be made. But Galaxy Quest!
Yeah, one of the things I said is that, like, the tropes of the show are brought out by each of the characters in different ways. You know what I mean? Like, you have the captain, he's experiencing his own tropes and stuff, and then you have crewman number 6, who's like, I'm the guy who dies! And then there's, of course, Sigourney Weaver's character has that great line, because all her character does... It's very much a playoff Diana Troy in Next Generation, who was a character who only existed to put a woman on the bridge. Because they had the female doctor, but they were like, oh, it's all the, you know, guys on the bridge. Let's put a woman in there. And they made up this part for her that was just sort of tacked on and it was never really fully realized, because she's supposed to be like the psychic aide. Later, they made her the ship's psychologist, which worked better.
Psychic aid?
Yeah, so the common example that, like, people give of the problem with Diana Troy is that she would be on the bridge, and Picard would be talking to some alien, and the alien would be, like, shaking his fist, and he's like, I'm gonna get you, and all this. All right, and then the screen would go down, you know, the communication would be cut off, and Diana Troy would just, you know, she has this psychic impression of people who are empathic.
Okay,
that's it.
I'm like, psychic, that's like, that's...
Sci-fi
that Star Trek would try to go for, like, seems not...
No, it's empathic. She's an empathic alien, right?
Okay.
And so she, after this, like, alien's like, rawr, and the screen goes blank, she turns to Captain Picard and she says, I think he's angry.
So most of her observations would be entirely obvious?
Yes. And that's the Sigourney Weaver's character. All she does is repeat what the computer says. Which is a hilarious exaggeration of that kind of useless character that was created to have a female character be there.
Yeah.
In an unfortunately sexist culture. yay!
Yeah, that line she gives is, do you have that quote still up?
Yeah. The captain is asking a question of the computer, but he has to ask it to her. And then she asks the computer, and the computer answers, and then she says what the computer just said. And the one guy points out, is like, you know, that's really annoying. And she turns on him, she goes, look, I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm going to do it, okay?
The computer also doesn't respond to anybody else but her repeating what other people say.
Right. It's that great kind of communication thing where you have to say something and one person repeats. actually just made me think of in Close Encounters when they have a group of people there and, like, everyone is speaking a different language, and it's whatever they're saying is being interpreted to someone else who's reinterpreting to the next person.
Oh, yeah.
Because the essential theme of that film is about communication. So, anyways,
what was the pilot's name?
Oh, I think it was Tommy.
Tommy, is that kind of like a nod to Will Wheaton with like a kid being on the ship or something like that? That gets.
It's almost like a combination nod to Will Wheaton and the Reading Rainbow guy.
Ah, Geordi LaForge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Tommy.
Tommy.
Played by Daryl Mitchell.
Yeah, I guess that would be. It's like they took him, that character, and just put it in like the Will Wheaton mold, and it's like, little kid.
I love the scene where it's like the bridge is like everything's going when they're crashing through the minefield.
Yeah.
And afterwards, it's like he's injured, and instead of being like the person hanging there, you know, limply being carried away to like sick bay, right? He's like screaming.
Yeah, his like legs broken or something. He's just like, just like, that probably actually be more accurate than.
Yeah, it's a great gag, and it also has that layer of extra meaning.
He's freaking out during the flying through that too. He's just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Everything's exploding.
The best is when. They're pulling out of the bay, and the ship starts to list towards One Direction. They all start to lean, like,
ugh. You can turn. And it scrapes against the, is that a playoff of like, the Star Trek motion picture? Cause they had that.
Yes, an extended sequence where it was just because, the Star Trek the motion picture was trying to do 2001, Space Odyssey, like Kubrick style. It really just slowed everything down. It's like, look at this ship and all this music plays, right?
Yep.
And then pulling out, the ship pulling out of bay was just like, took forever.
And so they have this extended sequence of the ship just slowly scraping the side of the space station as it's leaving. It's just the scraping sound for a whole minute. And then the music just goes, kicks back in as soon as they leave.
That is hilarious. It's like, you think about the flaws in logic with science fiction shows, and the alien race built this ship completely off of what it was in the TV show. How it worked, everything was based on the TV show. Exactly. Like, to minute detail. Which gets to that point where it's like, we have to get to this place to get the thing, and the hallway to get to that place is just a bunch of things clanging together for no reason. It's a manufactured death trap for no reason.
The whole time you have Sigourney Weaver's character just screaming about, it's like, why was this written in the show? This is so stupid. Like, this is completely pointless. I'm going to kill whoever wrote this. Yeah. And it's just like, yeah, in sci-fi, you do often have things that are just in there because it looks cool and not because it does anything. I had a moment like that when I was like, I was talking to you about the show 100, which I have a lot of problems with. And there was a moment where one character had to crawl through like a duct to like get to another part of like the space station that was cut off. And for whatever reason, this important duct was like right next to like this really hot heating element or something. And it's just kicking a lot of heat for no reason. And like in the middle of this crawl space, it's clearly there so people can do maintenance. There's a grate just blocking his way. And I'm like, why is this here? This isn't even a ventilation shaft. It's clearly there just so he could go like, fuck, I'm stuck.
Yeah, you feel like they got like a deck of cards with like their tropes written on them. It's like he's going down the grate and flip the card.
Yeah.
But back to Galaxy Quest. We've got matches. Alan Rickman.
Yeah, that's why we watched this.
Yeah. The reason we watched this was because of the unfortunate passing of Alan Rickman. And he's great in this, playing an exaggeration of the Spock character. And that whole thing where Leonard Nimoy put out this book called I Am Not Spock. And
did he?
Yes. He wrote a book called I Am Not Spock, which was, as he claims, him trying to say, it's like, look, Spock is a character that I played, but this is my biography. This is about my life, not Spock's life. You know,
is that why, like, he'd be like in so many random different things during like the 70s?
Yeah, he was in a ton of stuff.
He just like, he's all of a sudden, he's doing a Bigfoot documentary, and then he's doing a manual on how to run your laser disc player with the help of a rock. It's like, it's like, it would just be the really random things. And I'm like, is he trying to like just do as many different things so that like he could prove that it's like, I'm not just like this science fiction guy. I can.
But he was also in things like that because he was Spock.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it was. It was some, like, unsolved mystery show that he did.
Yeah.
That we're too young to remember. Yeah, it was a whole show where every week they did a highlight of a different, like, UFOs, Bigfoot, Men in Black. But the Bigfoot one is the most remembered. That's the one that shows up on the internet constantly.
I think I watched it on TV.
I wish I could say more about it because it sounds like it was really interesting. And he would be a great host for that. But. Mm-hmm.
Remember, he did an art show at...
Oh, yeah, he was very much into art.
Yeah, at Mass MoCA, I think? Yeah, I think it was the Massachusetts Museum of Contemporary Art, and there was, like, this whole show that was all, like, this kind of series that he was working on.
Oh, I thought you said he did an art show and he had a lot of chocolate coffee.
What?
Mass MoCA.
Oh, no. It's the name of the museum. It's a good museum.
But yeah, Alan Rickman, playing that character, he's like, they have to, like, wrestle him to stay at the convention.
Okay, it's like, yeah, he's like this high theater actor that got somehow mm-hmm. into this role. It's just like, it's all he's known for, and he just hates it.
Yeah, it's like, he saw his career as like, I was supposed to be this kind of thing. And that's happened to people, especially when they're playing something like superheroes or science fiction characters. Mm-hmm. Especially, like, anything that appeals to children, they get so identified with that. George Reeves' Superman was a great example.
Yeah. I would love to meet Mark Hamill, but it's like, I would totally resist ever talking about Star Wars ever with him, because, like, I'm sure it's like he would have heard people talking about that all the time, and it's like all he's identified with besides the Joker.
Yeah, I don't think anyone could ever look at him and not see Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. Even now that he's old, it's like he's still playing Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, I'm glad to see him back.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to more Skywalker. Luke Skywalker!
So they're all at this convention, and they all hate it to a certain degree. Alan Rickman's character hates it the most. He's like, no, I'm not going to say that line ever again. No, but he keeps doing it because it's
his live long and prosper.
Yeah. You've got to get sick of saying that stuff at a certain point, you know?
Yeah. But Tim Allen, like, he's the one that fully embraces it until he has the Shatner moment.
Yeah, there are two counterpoints in the group of characters. They do it twice. It's like everyone's sitting around sort of loathing, you know, oh, we got to go out there and we got to shake the hands of the fans and take their questions and, like, deal with the shippers. And people asking us science questions we don't know the answer to. And then Tim Allen shows up and is just like, hey, everybody, are you excited to get out there and meet the fans? And, you know, it's like he's the counterpoint in that situation. And then later, when they start getting taken to space, everyone's all freaked out. At first, they're like, oh my God, what just this? We thought this was a gig and we actually went to space. And then Tony Shalhoub, he goes through the space portal. And he's just like, that was cool.
I love Tony Shalhoub's character. I know why his character acts the way he does because of some deleted stuff that they took out. The whole reason his character is like that is because he was smoking marijuana. And there is even a comment in the film too. It's like, what's wrong with you? He's like, do you smoke pot or something like that? But I'm glad they cut, like, it was cut out because of, like, censor reasons and all that stuff.
Yeah, originally this was going to be an R-rated movie and, like, there was tons of profanity in it and everything.
Yeah.
But then they decided to make a PG-13 and they cut all that back. And the one thing that almost made it through was the pot smoking. But then that got cut at the last minute.
That got cut. But it's like one of those weird, this is an interesting incident where, like, because they had to cut it back for PG-13, it made some of these elements just so much more funny. Like, one of them is just how unaffected Tony Shalhoub's character is to everything.
It's a hilarious counterpoint to how everyone else is overreacting. He's underreacting.
Yeah. He's like, in the engineering, things are blowing. I was like, hey, guys, stuff is...
People are, like, flying across.
Yeah, breaking down. Yeah. And then when they fix the problem, it's like, oh, it's good. You guys did it. Come here. And they all, like, hug the other.
He's like, bring it in. Yeah.
It's like when like you were saying before, he teleports and he just... Everybody was affected by that crazy transportation sequence, but he just pops through and goes, that was a hell of a thing. And then he walks over to Tim Allen's character. He's like, what's wrong with him? He's like, I don't know. Let's go.
And then the one guy just starts screaming. And there's an interesting thing that I can only get to by talking about something else. So this is going to be kind of long-winded. So there's been talk of turning this into a television series.
I don't know.
And I just don't see how you sustain this, because it gets to the point where it's like, what is the concept? Do they keep going back and forth from their, you know, Earth lives to, like, adventures out in space? At a certain point, they have to ask themselves, wait, isn't what we're doing really stupid and irresponsible? We're not qualified to do this. The reason it works in the film is that they get caught in the situation and have to survive to get out of it before they realize what they've gotten into. Only Tim Allen's character makes the mistake of being so arrogant as to think this would just be a fun thing that he's got to get his friends to go on this trip with them out into actual space.
Yeah, that is a problem with having these. Because by the end of the movie, they said everything they wanted to say.
Yes.
And there just wouldn't be really anything left to do. Like, if you started from scratch and had this.
No, there is actually, I can imagine one good sequel to this. And the story of the sequel is like the government found out that they went to space and starts to like investigate them. And then the alien who the race, whose general they killed off in the first movie, they find Earth. And it's all, the whole theme would be like, they're found out first by the government. You see what's going on there and they're trying to dodge that, deal with that situation somehow.
Oh,
and then the aliens show up and it's an alien invasion and. You know, you get the ship that they're in, and say you got like, say it's like, actors shouldn't be running the ship, well, let's get some astrophysicists and scientists in here. And they don't know how to run the ship because it doesn't work according to actual science. It works according to the logic of this TV show. So only the actors know how to do this. And that's how you make a sequel to Galaxy Quest.
And even then, you can even play off of, tropes of alien invasion movies, like Independence Day and stuff. Like, you work in new other science fiction issues that are out there.
Now, this is a pitch for my new podcast that we just make up sequel ideas for movies that don't have them.
And hope Hollywood comes knocking.
Yep. Next week, we'll be covering The Ten Commandments Part 2.
Hollywood, if you want us to pen the next sequel to Galaxy Quest, please email us at email@cyclejellyfish.com.
Man, that would be intimidating because this script is so freaking good.
It is. It's just, it doesn't let up.
I was looking at like the director and thinking, he didn't really do anything that good after this. I mean, television work and stuff, but not really like that original things. And this has such an original voice, and I'm like, where did that come from? And I can only point to the writer, the script itself, written by David Howard, who, this is the only thing he wrote. And trying to find more information on him, apparently he does theater work.
So he writes theater stuff?
Apparently. I don't know. I can't get, like, a good information on him.
Yeah, it's always interesting with these people that do, like, one-off thing that's amazing, and they just disappear.
Yeah, we actually should do a month of that, of movies that were like one person's creative vision and then they never did anything else.
You guys were talking about one on Evan's noir list.
Yeah, the one we talked about the most was Night of the Hunter, which is a fantastic film. Amazing cinematography.
Directed by?
Charles Laughton.
It was his only film he directed, right?
Right. Yeah. He was mainly an actor. And the film bombed. It's an incredibly dark film and has, like, various religious themes about it. And then, so it wasn't necessarily, like, the feel-good summer movie people were looking for at the time, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, I remember watching this this movie in our family living room. Like, it was like a family event. Like, we rented it and we watched it in our living room in, like, 99.
I don't know why Galaxy Quest wasn't more successful. You think about it, it was 1999. This was the year The Matrix came out. This was when...
Phantom Menace came out.
The X-Files was huge.
Star Trek Voyager had wrapped up, right?
No, I think it was still going. Star Trek Voyager went into the 2000s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that was still pretty popular. Oh, you had Deep Space Nine, too.
Deep Space Nine was still going, so you had two Star Trek shows on television, and there were Star Trek movies that were still being made at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie came out, and it just didn't do well. Like, it didn't find its audience until later.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder what movies were out the same month that probably killed it. That could be the case. There might have been, like, some blockbuster or something that just took it the box office away. Like, if it had been released during, like, a slower month. That it could shine in better, maybe? Like in Fuck You, it's January?
Well, like you said, that was when Star Wars Episode 1 came out. That was the year that The Mummy came out.
So there was appetite for this stuff, it's just...
It might have just gotten lost. This was also Fight Club's year. The Matrix.
It had to have just come out like when the Sixth Sense movie was big.
It must have. I don't know exactly the month. Let's see. It came out in December. It came out Christmas Day.
Only Star Wars is going to be able to pull that off.
This feels like maybe one of those situations where the studio didn't know how to really promote it. Then it just kind of got shoved out there on a bad day. That was Y2K time, man. You remember that?
Yeah, I do. My family did no preparation.
Well, your family did the right thing, first of all. Which was to not frickin' worry about it. But back to the film, it, like, all these characters, you know, they get out there in space and they're, like, losing their minds. They're, like, encountering the tropes of the show that don't make any logical sense and just, like, banging their head against the wall. But gradually they each have this moment where they're able to, like, accept their role and, you know, find themselves again and take on the challenge, right?
Right.
Tony Shalhoub has that moment where he's got to run the transportation device.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Allen actually gets several moments. Sigourney Weaver, that thing where she's like, I'm going to own my stupid role. And then, of course, when they have to get through that gauntlet. But this film isn't just like slapstick. It actually has some real heart to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like, at first it's like, oh, these aliens, they believe we're actually these heroes and we're just actors. Isn't that silly? And then it gets to the point where it's like, oh, this is actually kind of, tragic.
Yeah.
The aliens are so lovable and quirky and they have their little movements that they all do.
I love how they walk.
And then, you know, the alien warlord shows up and starts torturing them and killing them off. And you're like, no, it's like, to put it in like today's equivalence, it's like if somebody started murdering minions.
Although I like these guys more than minions.
Oh, yeah. And some faces show up in the background there, like the guy from The Office.
Oh, Rainn Wilson? Yeah, he's like, He shows up in the limo and then he doesn't really show up again until like one of the engineering. He's like one of Tony Shalhoub's underlings.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might, like, looking at that, it looks like it's one of his first roles if you look on IMDb.
And it's also the first movie for Justin Long. So there are some people who were at the beginning of their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like when we watch Shaun of the Dead and go, wait a minute.
Is that Martin Freeman?
Yeah, it's like that scene where the one alien is being tortured and Tim Allen is forced to try to explain to him that the show is not real and it's a show.
Yeah.
It's really kind of heartbreaking.
It's almost like the reverse of like a drama having comedic relief.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you have a comedy that has dramatic depression. I don't know.
Dramatic moments. Yeah. Moments where, you know, they actually invest in the characters dramatically and raise the stakes of everything that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is that great thing. It's like, yeah, if actors went out and tried to actually deal with the things that they were doing in the TV show, things would not go well.
No. No.
And they really don't pull back on that punch of showing the consequences. And that is hugely important to what makes this, like, really carry the weight where you're like, this is a great movie and I gotta see this again.
Yeah.
And share this with friends.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely one of those, like, you haven't seen Galaxy Quest? Stop what you're doing right now.
Absolutely. I love this film.
I do too, Dave.
I saw it when I was younger, before I saw any Star Trek, and I liked it then. But since, you know, as an adult and, like, college, I started watching Star Trek and watched a bunch of it. Almost all, most of it. More than necessary, for sure. And now rewatching it, just appreciating it on a whole nother level. And also being more aware of the writing. And oh my god, also, one more thing we can't end the show without mentioning. There are really good effects in this. From the costumes and the early, you know, 1999 CGI elements that they used successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Like the rock monster is CGI, but it works. I was so surprised that the CGI did not feel dated in this.
Some of it looked a little dated to me. Like the little...
Well, yes, if you're going to technically analyze it, it's dated, but it didn't take me out of the story.
No, it's not like some other movies out there, like episode 2.
Yeah, which was after this. They have no excuse. Star Wars Episode 2 is a movie that has no excuse for being as bad as it is. It's really the worst. It is the worst of all of... It is the worst of any Star Wars movie will ever be.
Even worse than the holiday special?
Yes. And I will stand by that. But, like, the squid alien things and the transition. Like,
oh, yeah.
Especially when the guy was being tortured, and every time he was shocked, he turned into, you know, what the alien's true form is. They're not actually humanoids.
Yeah. The squid seemed to be a mixture of, like, CGI and puppetry, yeah. And that pig monster was just a dude, like, wearing it, like, his legs were the legs of the monster, and he's just wearing it all around him.
I love seeing that stuff, and we don't get to see it as much these days, unfortunately.
Except in episode 7.
Yeah, but used in this context where it's fun, it's almost more like the Muppets, you know, where you're seeing these, you know, rubber creatures in this fun situation. Like the Muppets of Labyrinth, which we just did.
Yeah. Well, David.
What more can we say? You gotta see this.
Do it. Do it, audience. Or we're gonna do nothing, but we're gonna implore you to see this movie.
But I'm excited for next week, because next week, St. Patrick's Day is rolling around. And we did something last year that turned out to be really super fun. So we're like, hey, that wasn't the only movie like that. In fact, there are a number of sequels. Why don't we return to this subject and watch Leprechaun 2?
And Lucas... co-host of Last Corner of the Arcade has agreed to come back to guest host this episode.
Oh my god, I'm looking forward to this. Warwick Davis, man.
Warwick Davis. Well, Jellyheads, thanks for listening to this episode of No U-Turns at the Drive-In.
You almost said Last Coin.
No, I didn't. No,
own
no.
That
you can't prove,
and
you can't,
redo
you can't
it.
Prove it. You can't prove it.
This is being recorded.
We're your hosts, Luke and...
Dave.
If you enjoy what you listen to, may I suggest you go to our website at psychojellyfish.com to find this and other podcasts. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and the podcast app Stitcher. Please rate and review. It really does help the show. If you're a fan, you help spread the madness. Give us a like at facebook.com/psychojellyfish or follow us on Twitter at jellycast. Any thoughts, words, comments, questions, leave it to us in the comment sections.
Good night, gentle listeners.
Keep it psycho.
It is an extremely clever spoof on the Starch, on Starch, is it, the, I can't, one day I will get through one of these without having to restart.
You know my struggle, Dave.
Yeah.